What the hell was that?
Can you hear me now?
Can you hear me?
Hello?
Yeah. Are you there?
We gotta get rid of this kook. I got an idea.
Greatness at its finest.
Welcome to the Rodcast.
Wonder who that could be.
On the Horn, 104.9 AM 1260.
Come on, why you want to play a brother like that?
And hornfm.com.
Is there a problem back there?
Where the Longhorns play and Austin talks sports.
Welcome back to the Rodcast, a Monday fun day edition of the Rodcast, creeping closer and closer to football season, so we got a ton of it to talk about, and I got to tell you, there's some ugly football stories we got to get to. There are some good ones. I'll give you my favorite football-related story of the day. They talked about it a little bit when Trey and BK with my man Justin Wells sitting in. And we'll get to that, too, because I think it's the first time I've ever heard of anything like this as a punishment for a football player. It's a beautiful thing. I think there's a deeper meaning to it, so we'll get to that a little bit later on in the show. We'll also go behind the burnt orange curtain. We'll talk a ton of Texas football on the show. They had their first scrimmage of the offseason. There are some injuries, unfortunately, that we have to get to as well. We'll also talk about how those injuries are going to affect the upcoming depth chart, possibly for Maryland. Speaking of Maryland, they got their own issues to deal with. They have indefinitely suspended DJ Durkin, their head coach, and their strength and conditioning coach, as well as some other assistants related to the strength and conditioning staff. That is related to the death of a player, an offensive lineman, Jordan McNair, and the circumstances surrounding his passing have now become a topic of conversation and a very controversial one, because people are wondering if more could have been done, and now there are reports that there is a history of abuse, like player abuse, if you will, as relates to the strength and conditioning staff with
You make an oversized person that's working on, you know, their weight or their diet. You make them sit in front of your peers, and you got to eat a candy bar in front of them.
Sounds like
damn near hazing, man. That's the type of stuff that we used to. Nah, you know what? I can't even admit to that.
It sounds like player abuse.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I don't. I'm trying to figure out a better way, a more politically correct way to put it. But yeah, I'm with you. It just sounds like hazing to me. Like, that's not what a strength and conditioning staff should do. Yeah.
The one thing I did learn in the military, dude, you don't put somebody down in front of their peers. Like, if I was correcting a Marine, I took him away from his peers. You know what I mean? Away from the platoon.
Yeah.
That way, you don't embarrass somebody, man. Yeah. You praise in the crowd. You take away, you discipline away from behind closed doors. You know what I'm saying?
No. I'm with you. And my man Wags knows something about leadership. I want you to get in on that conversation too, because I mean, I think you're a Maryland football fan because you grew up.
I grew up a Maryland Terrier. So I still fear that. When FSU's fight song or whatever, when that war song comes on, that's still, it's a little bit of PTSD there growing up, man. I grew up a Terrapin fan, man, but I'm 40 acres through and through.
It's a big story. It's one of the biggest stories in sports, so we'll get to it. We'll dive in it. There are a lot of details and a lot of misinformation out there about it, so we'll sift through it, and I'll give you all the details. I'll give you my take on the Maryland story as well. There may be another development in the Urban Meyer investigation. And it just came to my attention, and I think that it doesn't bode well for Urban Meyer. Now, I've changed my stance on Urban Meyer. I said initially when it first came out, and the stories were basically he was just covering up. He had lied and also was covering up for a serial domestic abuser on his staff. I was like, oh man, he's gone during the Me Too movement, done deal. Like, if that is the case, then he's done. That story changes because he says, yes, I misspoke or I misremembered whatever he said. And he admitted, yes, that he lied, but he also reported all of the things that were, at least to his knowledge, all of the things in the past of Zach Smith that that wide receivers coach, the assistant coach, who was now fired. He said he reported to his AD or to the proper he put it through the proper channels. Exactly what he did. At least that's what he said he did. And Zach Smith backed that up when Zach Smith had an interview on ESPN and said, yes, I talked to Urban Meyer about it, and I told Urban Meyer, Urban Meyer asked me about it, and I told him I did nothing, and I didn't abuse her. And I think that's also something that most people don't believe. But for Urban Meyer, he did confront him about it. He asked him about it. He told him that he would fire him if he was guilty of domestic abuse again, separate from the 2009 incident. And Urban Meyer was informed that by him that he did not do anything. I don't know why there wasn't a follow-up. Who knows? But then the 2000, obviously the latest incident is the one that blew the whole story wide open. Brett McMurphy, of course, the one that broke the story. Now there's another development potentially about Zach Smith and his background, and it could go to hurt the case of Urban Meyer that he was just giving a young head coach a second chance after the 2009 domestic violence incident that he had. And by the way, he was the longest tenured coach on Urban Meyer's staff. Of course, the grandchild of Earl Bruce, one of the mentors of Urban Meyer growing up. So there is a bit of a slightly like nepotism, you know, connection and thing going on there too. All right. So we'll get to that, too, because I think that that's a big story that's kind of simmered down. Of course, there was the salacious story over the weekend that turned out to be refuted on several different fronts, that Tom Herman was the source of the Brett McMurphy story. And that was one of those rumors that we all really wanted to believe. We all kind of really wanted to believe that salacious gossip. Yeah,
that was awesome.
You know, it would have been so awesome, but it was refuted by Tom Herman, refuted by Michelle Herman, Tom Herman's wife. Tom Herman did clarify about whether he helped out the victim in this case, which is Courtney Smith, the wife of the ex-wife of Zach Smith, and Brett McMurphy himself also refuted that claim because Brett McMurphy came out and said, "I don't like to reveal my sources, and I won't." But he said, I can tell you Tom Herman was not that source. So it's something that we really, really wanted to be true. Just turns out there's not a lot of evidence to support it. But I tell you this. If you're into conspiracy theories, and I am, and I love to be out on that grassy knoll, that is a great conspiracy theory. It's up there. It's everything fits with that conspiracy theory. You know what I mean? It really does. We just don't have any actual evidence to back it up. Which, you know, a lot of conspiracy theories, that's the beauty of them. All right, so we'll get into that. We'll talk about it. We'll go behind the burnt orange curtain and dive into that a little bit, too. The fake news that blew up over the weekend. Also, we got to talk about Tiger Woods, y'all. As a matter of fact, we'll start there. That's the biggest story. Probably in sports right now. I mean, it's I don't know if there is a bigger story right now in sports. And Tiger Woods, and it's interesting because he didn't win, finished second. He did shoot his best round, his best final round in a major, which is also phenomenal. He shot a 64, so Tiger's won 14 majors on a Sunday and had his lowest final round of a major. He's, 42 years old, making his comeback. And there are some people who are upset, traditionalists. I will say traditional golf fans are a little upset because Tiger's getting all the love. And Brooks Koepka, who has won with this three majors in the last six majors, how about this? This may be even more impressive in my opinion. He's finished 13th or better in 10 of the last 12 tournaments he's played in.
But does he wear a red shirt on Sunday?
You know what I mean? No, he doesn't. But man, he's killing. He's going to be the golfer of the year this year, no question. No, there's no doubt about it. He's the PGA's golfer of the year. And he is almost impervious to pressure. It just doesn't really affect him. He just keeps rolling when the pressure's on, and he knows that the world wants him to lose because the world wants Tiger to win so badly. And, man, he just close. I mean, he was unshakable out there. You got to give Brooks Koepka a lot of credit. And the three majors now in the last six, he's got a chance now to become one of those guys that can make history. I will say this, though. The thing is, he's the best golfer right now in the world. I mean, that's the way he's playing. I don't know his official ranking now after that big win at the U.S. Open, but he is right now playing like the best golfer in the world. But Tiger Woods is bigger than golf. So for people who are upset about, you know, the Tiger thing, I totally understand it because Tiger is not the best golfer in the world. Tiger, right now, I think Tiger's ranked 26th after his second-place finish. All right, so he's 26th after that second-place finish, which is really good for Tiger, actually. And, you know, it's one of those things where Tiger's now a part of pop culture. He's, you know, the Chappelle Show has Tiger on it, and, you know, Saturday Night Live, they do skits that may have Tiger on it, and, you know, South Park have Tiger Woods in episodes. He's at the point now where, like, Kobe and LeBron and MJ and Shaq, he has transcended into the pop culture realm. So he's way bigger than golf now. Tiger is a phenomenon in itself. That's why advertisers love Tiger Woods. And now he's got a struggle. He's got this great comeback story. And all the greats, all the GOATs, you know, usually got a great comeback story associated with him. You know, Muhammad Ali may be the greatest comeback story of all time, but MJ had that comeback story. You know what I mean? MJ left for a while and had his comeback story. The comeback story is if you want the, you know,
it's the story
status,
of the hero, man.
The status of being, no, it's the great, yeah, the evolution of becoming an underdog, though. You know, like, you, how does the GOAT all of a sudden become an underdog? How did Muhammad Ali, the greatest boxer in the world, become an underdog? Because he stood up for something that he was very principled about, wasn't going to go to war. He was a conscientious objector, and it was like, you know what, I'm not going. They stripped him of his title. He lost most of his prime and then became an underdog. Like, and that's hard to do. Michael Jordan, all right, won 3 titles in a row. He has a breakdown. You know, his dad is murdered, and, you know, he's got a lot of issues going on, goes to play baseball for a year, and all of a sudden comes back and not the same Michael Jordan the first year he comes back, and he becomes the underdog. How the hell does that happen? LeBron James, and I don't even, you know what, this might be LeBron James' fault, but, you know, LeBron James ends up beating the Golden State Warriors. They become so desperate, all right, to win. They go get KD, who is also desperate because he can't beat LeBron James. And now LeBron James, the best basketball player on the planet, who we're comparing to Michael Jordan, is an underdog all of a sudden. And if he wins another title, it might be his greatest.
Funny how that narrative just keeps getting thrown out there,
right? Yeah, it's the same one. Exactly. It's the same narrative over and over again. But I think the GOATs, if you want to become a GOAT, you almost have to go through that big that great comeback story.
It's like the story of Homer, right, with Greek mythology.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Educate me.
Well, I love it. The hero goes away, and then
Hercules, same thing.
Right, one of the Greek heroes, right? They go away, and then they have their fall. Right, they have their failing character trait. Right, then they have to overcome it. God, America loves an overcome story.
We love that story.
Perseverance, man. That's the best story.
We like underdog stories,
no doubt.
And you know, when a goat like that can become an underdog, like Tiger is now, you know, it's gonna make him
how much of a goat is he?
That much transcendent. I mean, I've always said he's gonna win another major. I ain't gonna lie. Of course, I doubt it for a while. How can you not doubt that? I just thought he was too young not to. And he's 42.
Dude, I don't even watch golf that much. And so I saw that Tiger was wearing his red, and he was in second. I stopped what I was doing and I turned it on.
I think
you know what
of America did.
Yeah, exactly.
The Tiger effect. The ratings were up 69%. They're reporting.
To your point.
Let me make sure I get the source correct. But yeah, apparently the ratings were up around 69%. So, you know what I mean? I mean, that's the Tiger effect. Darren Revelle, he's the one reporter. I'll make sure I get it. The overnight ratings of yesterday's final round for the PGA Championship were 69%. And up 69% from last year. So that's what it's about. It's got nothing to do with Brooks Koepka. And even Brooks Koepka admitted, hey, man, Tiger is the guy that I looked up to. And I patterned my game a lot after Tiger. And the Tiger effect not only is about the ratings and about the money that he's been able to infuse into golf, but also he's affected the game. Like, he's actually changed the game. No player has impacted golf more than Tiger. Like, I'll give you a couple of stats and quotes. Because, you know, Tiger came on the scene and essentially made every golf course shorter because he had these blockbuster booming drives. Where, you know, accuracy really wasn't prioritized to him. It was all about just getting it out there as far as I can get it, and then I'll adjust to it. And then I'll use my short game, which for Tiger, that's one of his strengths. That's one of his assets. And it still is. And now all the players who grew up, young golfers, grew up emulating Tiger Woods because Tiger Woods was the greatest phenomenon that golf's ever seen. They've patterned their game after Tiger. Dustin Johnson, Rory McIlroy, Brooks Koepka being one of those guys too. You look at John Rahm, all those guys. Here's a quote from Brooks Koepka about how accuracy and aim are overrated. He said, being in the fairway, I think the fairways are a little bit overrated. And what did Tiger do?
He didn't hit one of them.
He didn't hit one of them. You know what I mean? Tiger shot 64 on Sunday at a major and did it without hitting a single fairway on the front nine. Not one. Not one. And that's how Tiger, really, Tiger's always kind of been like that. I mean, obviously he's been more accurate in his prime than he is now, but Tiger was all about, man, just that drive, that amazing, phenomenal drive, and then I will adjust to it after that. And you go look at it now, I'll give you the stat.
Yeah, the second shot's the most important shot, right? That's what that's kind of his philosophy, I'm assuming.
Yeah, he's averaging, how about the way, this is Brooks Koepka is averaging 313 yards off the tee. That's the ninth best on the PGA Tour. His accuracy is among the worst. He only hits the fairways on 56% of his drives. That's 182nd out of 205 players. All right, so accuracy, he's admitted, he said, quote, you can bomb it, and it doesn't really matter where it goes. He said, I'm going to have a wedge when guys are going to have a six iron, plain and simple. He said, I can still stop the ball on the green, out on the rough with a nine iron, but before people can stop it, out on the fairway with a six iron. So he's basically saying, hey, man, I'm just trying to get it out there as far as I can, and my shot will still be easier even if I'm coming from the rough or I'm coming from somewhere else than the guys who have to try to get it up there when their short game may not be as good. And Brooks Koepka, his short game isn't maybe not as good as Tiger's, but his long game, I mean, he's a beast. He's got one of the, top 10 best drives right now in golf, period. And how about this stat? Another stat for you. 18 players right now on the PGA Tour average 310 yards per drive or more. All right. 73 of them average over 300 yards. All right. Right off the tee from the drive. 8 years ago, there was only one golfer averaging over 310 yards per drive. One. Now there are eight. 12 players 8 years ago were averaging over 300 yards per drive. Now it's 73. That's the Tiger effect. All these young golfers, and we're at a time right now, one of the golden eras of golf. We got so many great young golfers. And Jordan Spieth, actually is a little bit of, he kind of goes against the grain of the great young golfers these days because Jordan Spieth, he doesn't have like a great drive. Like he doesn't have, like he's not booming off the tee. He really, kind of adjusts and has kind of a better overall game more so than as lopsided as some of these other guys are. Dustin Johnson, Rory McIlroy, Brooks Koepka, of course, Tiger. But that leaves little margin for error for Jordan Spieth. That's why Jordan Spieth, you've seen him have meltdowns, and he knows I don't have the margin for error of a Brooks Koepka because he doesn't have the drive of a Brooks Koepka. So his margin for error shrinks considerably. That's why I think, and he's still one of the greats right now in the game, but I think that's why you'll see him have a, kind of one shot totally just derail his game.
I think the fitness level is up in the PGA as well. Like you're seeing a lot more, you just mentioned those stats and the dynamics and everything of pretty much of everybody just having a good long ball, right?
Yeah.
Like the fitness up, resistance
chicks,
training
chicks
is up.
The long ball.
Exactly, man.
Yeah.
I think after Tiger's glutes were shutting off, I think they actually got back into it, man. Hitting the gym a little bit more, and yeah, that's the result of it.
No, you're right about that. Yeah, because Brooks Koepka is swole. I mean, that guy's been hitting. Yeah, he's hitting the weights.
Which is weird because I was always told to let the club do the work. Somebody lying to me, man.
Tiger changed. I remember Tiger used to like Navy SEAL training and all that kind of crazy stuff. And some people said that was to his detriment. That part of the reason now he has a fused spine or whatever it is. Yeah, Tiger's had some issues, but Tiger's making a comeback. Another quote from John Rahm, he says, it's, quote, gotten to the point where you don't even need to be accurate. You just need to be able to hit the ball long ways because maybe having a wedge out there in the rough is better than having a 7-iron out on the fairway. That's the new, and Brooks Koepka is the prime example of that. So that's the Tiger effect, too. People don't talk about that as much, but Tiger's had an effect there. The money, the ratings, everything. All the events and tournaments that Tiger's played in, and when he's especially playing on Sunday and he's in it, the ratings are through the roof. So, you know what I mean? Yeah, I mean, it's really good for golf to have one of the GOATs, all right, one of the Mount Rushmore golfers playing with all these really, really young golf, these great young golfers like Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth and Justin Rose and Rory McIlroy. It's a really, I mean, and they have the name that'll bring everybody to it, but then it's a really great event and it's very competitive because you have so many young, you know, great young golfers. You know, it reminds me of kind of what, you know, MMA wants to do. They don't really have a draw right now to the sport. In certain sports, golf being one of them, it helps when the superstar is bigger than the sport itself. They can carry the sport. Boxing's like that. That's why Money Mayweather, everybody will pay for that, but nobody's going to pay to see any other boxing event. They don't really give a damn. But you put Money Mayweather with Conor McGregor, oh, hell yeah, I'll pay for that. And that was one of the biggest pay-per-view events in the history of pay-per-view. Because you got the guy that was bigger than UFC and bigger than MMA, McGregor, versus Mayweather, the guy that's bigger than boxing. Boom, put them together. We got a spectacle event. And that's why Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods are going to play their own little independent 18 holes for $10 million or whatever, because they understand, oh, when we're certain sports have to do that. And I think it's smart now that MMA and combat sports and even golf are figuring out, man, we gotta bring some spectacle in there. We gotta learn from WWE. we gotta
marketing,
make it interesting.
Baby.
Marketing, yeah. I mean, Vince McMahon, we gotta learn. We gotta promote because we're not
Don
the
King.
NFL. Yeah, we're not Major League Baseball. We're not the NBA. Those leagues are bigger than any one player. They are. Even MJ and LeBron are the, you know, MJ, LeBron, Magic, and Bird, very oftentimes, you know, very few times, I should say. But when those guys, superstars, reach that GOAT status like they did at one point, they become bigger than the league. Tom Brady may be on the same par as popularity as the league, but you get my point. It's rare in those situations with major American sports leagues where they become bigger than the sport. Some sports, even tennis is like this too, and boxing and MMA and golf, you want some superstar to transcend the sport. You need it. You need some Andre Agassi. You need some Serena Williams. Like, you need that figure. And right now, golf is in a really good spot because Tiger's that figure, but it's probably as competitive as it's been in a really long time with all these great young golfers. And that also, that's why Conor McGregor now is fighting Khabib. Remember, he's now, you know, that's a big part of that is, you know, they've been missing a superstar like Tiger, MMA. They're missing, they need that figure when Ronda Rousey left. And that's why they're trying to bring back, oh, God, Brock Lesnar, who's going to be 40-something years old and never.
Yeah, the center trying to create narratives and everything.
Yeah.
Instead of having a one actually present itself naturally.
Well, Conor McGregor's that guy.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's at a point now he's got that FU money, so he doesn't need their money. He doesn't need, Dana White has his thumb on all of UFC. So he is a great promoter and a great commissioner. But Conor McGregor's been able to get from under his thumb because now he's got FU money after that Mayweather fight. And if he goes to Mayweather and go, hey, man, let's have another fight, Mayweather may go, all right. And then he'll get another $30, $40 million or whatever he got.
Hey, man, what round do you want to go down
exactly,
in?
Exactly. And he's more uncontrollable by UFC standards. So, but UFC needs him. They need him bad. UFC's ratings are down, by the way. I want to make sure I did some research on this. And we'll go to a break after this. In 2016... UFC had 13 pay-per-view events that did 8.2 million in pay-per-view buys. That's around 630,000 per pay-per-view. In 2017, that number dropped to 12 events that did 3.7 million. So they had 12 events that did 3.7 million in 2017. They had 13 events that did 8.2 million in pay-per-view buys in 2016. You know what I mean? Like that. And without Conor McGregor fighting, without the big names like Ronda Rousey, less and less people are buying those pay-per-view buys. But that's why Conor McGregor wasn't suspended for his antics.
That was the worst career move that he ever made, though, man.
According
to Dana White,
that was despicable and disgusting. And it was, one of the most disappointing things he's ever seen in the history of UFC, and yet he wasn't suspended. Because they need that guy, and he's that guy. I will pay to watch Conor McGregor and Khabib. I'm going to pay. to watch
it. Man,
I don't like UFC that much. I don't like golf that much. But when Tiger's on, I'm going to go watch Tiger.
We agree. That was set up, right, by Dana? That was a marketing scheme.
I've always believed
WWE.
That. Yeah, it was WWE style. You know what? And there's always been a crossover between WWE and UFC. I think now it's just... it's more critical than ever because UFC needs to promote it. And wrestling, no matter who the stars are in wrestling, because I used to like wrestling way back in the day when it was Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair and Sting and Lex Luger and all those guys. I remember all the personalities that brought me to my television set to watch wrestling back in the day. Even when those guys changed, wrestling's ratings are still through the roof. They continually rebuild these superstars and images and these narratives. And UFC needs to learn how to do that. And there's always been a little crossover there. I think now they're just learning the lessons that WWE has been able to teach the entertainment industry now for years. And it's paid off. They got their own network now, too. Yeah, WWE knows how to do it, baby. That blueprint works. All right.
Started from regional wrestling. Yeah, regional wrestling, man.
Yeah, you got grown men. It's grown men soap opera. Like women like watch Real Housewives of whatever. Grown men are watching wrestling. It's their soap opera. And you want your league to kind of be a soap opera. You want people to bring people there. You want them to talk about it on The View. You want it to go from the sports page to the front page. Not all the time in a bad way, but, you know, Trump's proven that, and the Dallas Cowboys have too. You know what I mean? Yeah, any publicity kind of is good publicity. Just don't let it be about murder and rape. Other than that, people are willing to forgive about anything. entertain me. Entertain me, damn it. I'm bored. I'm on my phone, you know, most of the time. If I'm not on my phone, then entertain me. How you going to get me off my phone?
What are you doing on your phone? Trying to find entertainment?
Trying to find entertainment. That's all it's about now these days. Okay, I went on a rant there. Didn't mean to, but I thought it was a good one. We'll come back. We'll talk some Texas football. We'll also get into the NFL. My favorite football story of the day. All that and more right here on the Rodcast. This is the Horn 104.9 AM 1260. All right, welcome back to the Rodcast. You can always hit us up on the Specs text line, 512-337-3776. I'm at Rod Babers in the Twitterverse. My man Wags, heart and soul of the Rodcast, is at Not the Fake Wags. I love this story. One of my favorite story of the day. So, Antonio Callaway, Browns wide receiver, rookie Antonio Callaway, he got into a little bit of trouble. Well, he didn't get in trouble. Actually, it was his car that actually, I think, had some marijuana in it. And he was getting his car shipped or something like that. And he ended up getting a citation for marijuana possession. And he was driving without a suspended license, too, at the time. So his car had been shipped from Florida or something. This is what he says. He says that he didn't know the weed was in there. Because the car had been shipped from a certain location to a certain location.
I forgot to put my stash in there, man.
I don't know if he said he forgot or whatever, but he said that's the reason. Like, hey, man, I didn't even know it was in there. So when the cops stopped him, not only the suspended license, but also, hey, they found some weed in there. Now, he also reportedly, allegedly, tested positive for marijuana at the combine as well. So he's got a little bit of a history he's dealing with. So I think he's already in the program. You know, the NFL substance abuse program, once you test positive as an NFL. You know what? Actually, I don't know how the combine works because you're not officially an NFL player yet.
I think he's level one.
So is that's reported?
Yeah, status one.
Yeah, which actually is kind of ridiculous because you're not a player yet. Like, you haven't been drafted yet.
He hadn't signed anything, right?
Yeah, at the combine, no. You haven't been drafted yet. So to punish him at the combine for something seems like, whoa, what do you mean? Like, it just should be a different protocol because you're not officially a player. As a player, the CBA, that now you're obligated to go by whatever protocol there. Anyway, getting way too deep into it. My point being, that was his side of the story, and he's got a little bit of a history. So he is waiting on the NFL to either come down and punish him because he's already in the program, or waiting on the Browns to punish him. And he got one of the most unconventional punishments that I've ever heard of. I don't think I've ever heard of it, actually. Hugh Jackson decided his punishment was to play most of the preseason game. That was a punishment. You had this sound, Wax?
Yeah, a reporter was actually who asked Hugh Jackson post-game, you know, if that was the actual intentions. And we do have sound from Hugh Jackson, and here was his answer.
Yeah.
Callaway played well into the fourth quarter.
Absolutely, that was the plan.
Some people interpret that as discipline.
It was. I was trying to make him play the whole game if we could. I didn't want him to come out.
And why?
Because that was part of the consequence of what he'd been through, and he knows that. That's what it was. Either you sit him or make him play. I thought it was better to make him play. Make him play as long as he could. It was a couple of times he kept waving to come out. We said, no, stay in there.
And the way he persevered, did you like that?
I did. He worked through it. I mean, because there was times, like I said, he had his hands. I'm sure you guys seen hands on his head like this, and he was ready to go to the sideline. We go, uh-uh, you're back in there. So he fought through it and came out the other side of it and made some plays. So that was good.
Wow. Okay. This is like me coming
now,
home.
Do you like that as a kid? Is that no, who you want to play for?
No. Well, listen, I understand his reasoning, but think about this at any – let's just switch it up for a second, all right? I'll make this analogy. If I came home late and my woman was really upset we ain't gotten mad at me because I came home late and – you know what I mean? And I had, you know, a history of coming home late. She was like, hey, I thought you was going to be here, whatever. All right. And the punishment was, well, we're going to have more sex so that you don't go out there and, you know, you don't have to go out there and hang out and do whatever you're doing. We're going to have more sex. That's
what
we're going to do.
I'm just so exhausted. I don't think I can do that.
That's your punishment. Football is something he loves to do. And for your punishment, you are going to just let him do more of it. That's like, you know what I mean? Like, woman's like, yeah, my punishment being to have more sex, I will take that punishment. Like, that's not really a punishment. I don't see how that's a punishment. Now, this is not Saw or something crazy where you're forcing him to do something that, you know, is going to end up harming
it's
him.
It's not like he can't take plays off.
And by the way, he played 78% of the snaps. Here's the irony. He got hurt.
Probably because, yep, there you go.
He got hurt. I'm not making it up. He actually suffered a rib injury. He wound up with a rib injury. He was limited on practice on Sunday, which is why it doesn't make any sense from a lot of different ways, because he's an investment. I think they actually want him to make the team, which is why they have not cut him and he has not really been punished. They really want to see if he's worth the investment, and I think he is. He had three catches for 87 yards and a touchdown. Baker Mayfield, I think, threw him the touchdown. So he's a really good player. Got a little bit of an issue with, you know, marijuana, which a lot of players in the NFL use marijuana. They self-medicate with it. It's better than taking opioids. But they got to be responsible with it because, you know, the NFL still does not allow players to smoke marijuana. And I'll say this. I think Hugh Jackson, who's a player's coach, I think this is his way of saying the NFL is going to punish you. I'm not really going to punish you for weed. I'm a player's coach. I've had coaches in the NFL tell me they'd rather their players smoke weed than drink alcohol. They believe it's safer for them and it's better for them health-wise for their players. And I think Hugh Jackson's a player's coach, and we've had numerous players that come out on the record and say, yeah, I think there's 65 to 70% of the NFL smoking marijuana for different reasons and doing it in a safe and responsible fashion. But and the NFL is one of the only leagues that punishes for marijuana. Have you noticed that? How many guys often suspended for marijuana use in the NFL or, failing a drug test?
Controlled rage. What's the last time relaxed?
NBA players, it happens, but not very often. Major League Baseball, it happens, but not very often. Not for marijuana. Not every now and then it does. I'm not saying there. But the NFL, literally, year after year, there are scores of examples of guys who are suspended for marijuana. The rest of the leagues have a... You know, don't ask, don't tell.
When is the last time you heard of a Major League Baseball player popping for weed?
I know. For other stuff, yes. Other stuff.
It's not like it's not there. Don't tell me it's just not there.
So the NFL is one of the only kind of sticklers with it, and I think Hugh Jackson on the down low, this is him saying, I'm not going to really punish you for weed, man. If I have to, if you pull some Josh Gordon stuff where, you know, you've got four or five different failed drug tests on record or something crazy like that, yeah, then we got to look into you not being able to play at all. We'll take football from you, period. But if I don't really have a history of that type of addictive behavior, man, I'm just going to you can play 78% of the snaps to help you make – to give us more film to help you make the team. That's what I'll do to you as a punishment. But I'll flip it somehow. That's him being a player's coach. And the players like that. The players love that. They get the message. I think that's the message. Honestly, I'm not joking. I think that is overall the message. The NFL, they're going to come after you, and I can't do anything about that. You're in a program. That's you in the league. But you and me, if I got control of it, I'm letting you know how I kind of feel about it. That's minor to me. You know what I mean? I think as long as you're trying to be responsible, that's minor to him. Also, I think it says a lot about preseason and how dreadful the preseason is that people look at it as playing a lot in the preseason as punishment. That's how dreadful the preseason is to players who are considered veterans on a roster that, oh, if you're going to play a lot of preseason games, ooh, that's considered punishment. So that is, I like the story, though. It's got a lot of different angles you can come up. And I think he's being creative. Give him props for being creative about how to punish a player. All right, we'll go behind the burn orange curtain when we come back. We'll get to this, the fake news. The big fake news over the weekend that blew
fake
up.
Fake news.
That involved Tom Herman and Urban Meyer. It's one of those rumors that's so juicy we all wanted to believe it. I mean, it's just too good. We want to believe it very, very badly. It's like that. There's a rumor going around that LeBron James and Beyonce had a little affair on the side after Jay-Z cheated on Beyonce. There's Geek Out Lambo, who is a guy that dated, and this is actually fact. The rest of it's kind of just rumor and conjecture. That's gossip. The guy Lambo dated LeBron's mom because LeBron's mom is kind of a cougar, so she'll date young guys, man, and LeBron can't do anything about it. Like, she'll date different guys. Remember the rumor about her hooking up with, what's the NBA player? I forget his name.
That's probably the only time LeBron has felt helpless in his life.
I cannot remember hit me up on the Specs text line. I'm sure you do. I'll say Deshaun. I can see his face, but I just can't remember his name right now. But there's rumors about her getting it on with NBA players, some of LeBron's teammates back in the day. But the latest is this guy Lambo, who also dated LeBron's mom. He's writing a book, and in the book, he's claiming to have proof that Beyonce and LeBron James had an affair on the side. Like, that rumor is so good, you just want to believe it. Like, it's just too good. I want to believe that. There's something in us that is, you know, that is duplicitous, and we want to believe something like that.
Is it because it's the king and the queen?
It could be, you know, hopefully she just divorces Jay-Z and LeBron leaves his woman. And they pull some Brad Pitt, Angelina Jolie stuff, and LeBron and Beyonce have a child together, and that child becomes president of the United States. That's kind of where that rumor could lead. Well, a similar fake news, salacious gossip story broke over the weekend. It involved Tom Herman and Urban Meyer. We'll get into that when we come back and go behind the burn orange curtain. All that and more right here on the Ridecast. This is The Horn, 104.9 and Answer. Oh, Delonte West. Delonte West.
That just came to you.
Sorry.
Where did
West. He is the one that is rumored to have gotten it on and probably gotten it in as well with LeBron James' mama. Yeah. Boom. Sorry about that. All right. We'll be back right here on 104.9 The Horn. All right. Welcome back to the Ridecast. All right. Let's get into the fake news over the weekend. So over the weekend, Jeff Snook, who is he's a reporter.
Fake news.
He's a reporter on the Ohio State beat. And he reported that Tom Herman was the source for Brett McMurphy breaking the story about Zach Smith being a domestic abuser and Urban Meyer potentially not only lying about it, but potentially knowing about multiple incidents of him being a domestic abuser to his wife and still keeping him on the staff. Now he's suspended indefinitely. There's an investigation going on. Now that turned out, at least it was refuted, period. So it's not true. Fake news right now. It's in that category because Brian Davis of the Austin American Statesman reported that Texas coach Tom Herman tells me about the Jeff Snook story, quote, "It is absolutely untrue. Neither I nor anybody in my family has ever communicated with Brett McMurphy about the situation at Ohio State." And Herman also addressed the Snook claim that he and Michelle helped pay Courtney Smith's legal bills. In March of 2017, my wife assisted her friend, Courtney Smith, during a time of financial need. We have not provided any financial assistance since then. For those who have asked my response, and this comes from Brett McMurphy, by the way. For those who have asked about my response to Jeff Snook's claim Saturday, I have never revealed my sources in my nearly four-decade journalistic career, and I am not going to start now. However, I will say unequivocally that Tom Herman was not my source.
That ain't true!
Brett McMurphy said it ain't true. Tom Herman said it ain't true, and Tom Herman said the only part of that is there is some truth to it, there's some truthiness to it, is that, yes, we did help out Courtney Smith while we were there at Ohio State financially to help her probably get a lawyer or whatever and maybe to leave the domestic abuser, but since then we have not helped her out. And by the way, I was when I heard it, I was like, oh, I am actually hoping that this rumor and this gossip is true, because it would just mean that Tom Herman was not only helping out a victim of domestic abuse, but also that Tom Herman was diabolical enough trying to take down Urban Meyer in the process. So to me, listen, hey, as a Longhorn fan, and I understand his, and you say, oh, well, his motives weren't, you know, maybe his motives weren't necessarily to help out the victim. Well, he was helping out the victim, or at least his family, they were helping out the victim. So they were helping out the victim financially while they were there, and they probably did more than they're even willing to, you know, acknowledge. But I have no problem with Tom Herman being, you know, kind of a whistleblower. There's a difference between being a whistleblower, being a snitch, and being a rat. If you're a whistleblower, you saw wrongdoing happening and decide to do something about it, and then you just decide at one point, I got to make it public and let everybody know. There's only so much I can take. If you're a snitch, then you kind of watched everything happen, did nothing about it, you know what I mean? And when it benefited you the most, that's when you decided to divulge that information that you knew, that shady stuff was going on. As a rat, you get caught and you snitch. Like, that's the only reason. You got caught, you snitch. You're a rat. All right? You know what I mean? You got caught, and that's when you start to do it. So I think right now, Tom Herman, if that was true, and it's not true, would be in the whistleblower category. He did something about it when he knew it was wrong. He tried to help the victim out a little bit, be there for her. And then, hey, you know what? Later on, I'm taking down Urban Meyer with this information. Turns out it is not true. But as I always said, it's a difference between being, you know, someone who's an a-hole or considered that or perceived as that, and then someone being a bad person. Right now, we're trying to figure out if Urban Meyer was just an a-hole, which, hey, somebody, you got a-holes that'll cut you off in traffic all the time. You've probably been one at one point in your life. That doesn't make you a bad person. Right now, we're trying to figure out if Urban Meyer is a bad person because he's covering up and, you know, vouching for someone who's a domestic abuser, a serial offender, potentially. And matter of fact, when we come back, we'll talk more about that because we'll get into the latest information having to do with Zach Smith, reportedly or allegedly, who abused Courtney Smith, who was the wide receivers coach on his staff, on Urban Meyer's staff. So we'll get to that too on the other side. We'll talk more about the fake news that blew up over the weekend.
Fake news.
That I gotta tell you that I think a lot of Longhorn fans, they were kind of hoping that it was true on the down low. I'm willing to admit it. I was cool with that. Because you know what? Tom Herman to me, that just makes him somebody who is not on the side of a domestic abuser. And I'm fine with that. I'm fine with somebody who is anti-domestic abuse and who is also anti a coach potentially who will be covering it up. But turns out it's not true. But some of y'all still believe it. I'm on that conspiracy theory on that grassy knoll. We'll come back. We'll talk about that. We'll also talk about some NFL news notes and nuggets, all that and more right here on the broadcast. This is the Horn, 104.9 and AM 1260.